When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Straightforward. He has no experience of English football. He's come from Japan.
He's got to go to Middlesbrough and get something. I'll tell you, honestly, I will love it if we beat them. Love it.
So I'm not one of the bottle. I think I'm a special one.
I have to talk.
Hello, it's us, the Phoenix 5, Phoenix 4, Phoenix 3. Nope, it's the Phoenix 2. This week, obviously, we've had quite a big gap, guys, so thank you for sticking with us. It's very hard when you've got five middle-aged men with about 7, 8, 9 kids between us and jobs trying to balance an act of getting us all together in the room at the same time. But I'm joined by this week by one of my co-hosts and ever-present Mr. David Holland. Dave, how are you, mate? How have you been?
Yeah, not too bad, mate. Same old thing, same old story. Just struggling to get us all boys together, but we're down to two, so hopefully we can make a decent enough show.
Before we start on the topic, just talk about the football at the moment. Obviously, it's the summer holidays. No real football. You've got the Lionesses are in action on the women's football. So that's keeping us entertained for those that are watching. Premier League obviously kicks off in a couple of weeks' time. Arsenal so far invested well. What do you reckon?
Challenges? Well, the signings rate. I think 105 million for Declan Rice is, you know, you look at it and you think, oh my life. But he's 24 years old. So, you know, in today's market, a 5-year contract, that's not too bad going. On the fence with Havertz, I think everyone is not really sure where they're going to play, but he was in a Chelsea team that weren't really a team. So I think there's something there, but whether he can be consistent.
In the last season, I said when Arteta threw it away, because that's what, let's be fair, Arsenal threw it away. It was theirs to lose, and he threw it away. And
I think it's more of a squad thing as well. I think we had no depth on the bench. We lost Jesus in the World Cup for 4 months. And we're trying to win leagues with Nketiah. Now he's a decent enough finisher, but he's not a Premier League winning striker.
Yeah,
I think our bench was what let us down really. And the biggest loss out of it all, Saliba, because when he was in the team, we weren't conceding the goals that we were conceding. You see the stats, not that you know I'm a man that likes to bring stats up every now and again, but without him, it was a massive difference. But this guy, they brought in Timber now as well, which means if anything happens to them, Timber is on the right and Ben White could go back into the centre, even though he was great at right back last year. But yeah. we need a bigger squad. And this season, we've got that. But whether we'll be the same, we were the surprise package last year.
Yeah.
So going into this season, people are going to know how to play against us. So I don't think it's going to be as easy as people think. People, you know, no one expected Arsenal to be where they were last year. So now they're expecting it.
Yeah.
So it'll be different.
No, I agree. I think they've signed well. I think they need one or two more squad players to really get them over the line. I think. But when I looked at your business in this summer, I thought, you know what? And they backed him big as well, money wise, because he spent. People forget Arteta spent quite a fair amount of money there. People seem to think, oh, they're paupers, but you know, don't point compared to Man City. Man City net spend, when they do the net spend, they're just selling players for 40, 50 million half the time. So the net spend, I hate that. But your actual spend under Arteta has been quite high. So I think the ball this season, what you end up spending by the end of the season, 220, 230, maybe 250?
Yeah, well, I'm at 200 now. So, and they're still. But hey, do you know what? As an Arsenal fan, it's quite nice because obviously with the Emirates Stadium come and we weren't spending money and all that sort of stuff. It's just nice to be able to say, you know, we're putting in a transfer that's around what the big boys are paying. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we weren't doing
that before. It was always in the bargain basement, and you're getting someone from Chelsea who's in there, who's 31, and you know, like, and, you know, retirement packages, all that sort of stuff. So it's just nice that we can bring in a young player like Declan Rice, pay big money for him. You know, it makes a bit of a statement to say that we're, you know.
No, I agree. I mean,
then we go Lucy United.
We were linked with him. And I was like, not for that amount of money, only because, but I think purely because the last 10 years, we've paid 80, 90 million pound players and they've just not worked out. And I think if Declan Rice goes to Arsenal at that amount, yes, he's got the price tag, but there's still kind of a surprise package almost. There's not going to be that same hype as he goes to United. Every media outlet's on him, every fan's on him, you know. So I thought just if he comes to United, he'll end up being have to have an 8 or 9 out of 10 every game, and he won't be doing that, and therefore the pressure on it. I'm not sure about Mason Mount.
I was going to say that. Before we jump on to Mason Mount, Declan Rice, he's not one of them flair players like your Jack Grealish, who'll be looking at him to be creating goals, creating assists. So he won't be criticised for that. He's in there to do the donkey work, you know, like, and break up play and all that sort of stuff, which he does really well. He's been consistent with that, so there's no reason to think he can't. But you know, when you're saying you're paying £100 million for a Grealish, on that, they're expecting magic. You know what I mean? Yeah. They're not expecting that. It's a different role. Going on to Mason Mount, I've always been on the fence with Mason Mount. We spoke about this before. I don't see what other people see. Maybe it's just I just didn't like Chelsea or what. But and Chelsea fans, there's many Chelsea fans who really, really think he was great. And I know they're probably a little bit biased because he come through the ranks and he's one of our own and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah,
but I don't know. I've always been 50-50 on Mason Mount. Adam Miller, who's part of the Phoenix Five, who hasn't shown up today, he was, as Graham would say, wax lyrical about him. He thinks he's great, but I don't know. I'm on the fence with him. But,
I don't know.
You know, Manchester United might, you know, he might pull up trees. He may do.
Well, the thing is, he's come for a fee. United this season for the first time in a long time are coherent. They've not. We've been linked with the least amount of players I ever remember us being linked with for years. Like, we always linked about 50 different players. We were linked with Mason Mount, and that's who we went and got. We were linked with Aneo, the goalkeeper. That's who we got. We were linked with this Arabat midfielder, and we're linked with the young striker from Atlanta. And there's no like other people. We just seem to be going for the people we want. And then we're selling people like the younger kids for a decent fee. Like Elenga's 15 million. I think Fred's going to go for 15. Henderson will go for 15, 20. You know, we've got Jones has gone out. A lot of shit were in the squad. I mean, the De Gea decision, he's made a big decision by letting De Gea go and bringing in a more different type of goalkeeper. So I think if we can get the three more players in, I think we'll be battling for top four. I think that'll get us in the top four. But
yeah,
it'd be interesting to see because we're not going to be taken over by the time the Premier League starts. But if they do manage to take him over before, because the Premier League starts in the beginning of August and the transfer window shuts at the end, if there is a completion of a transfer of a new owners and Kylian Mbappe is still being spoken about, or Harry Kane hasn't gone at that stage, I can see that us then going in for one of those superstar signings. But I think what we've done, we've lowered the age of the squad. We've gone for younger players, a bit more dynamic. What I don't like is Mason Mount getting the number 7. And I don't understand how.
I don't think that helps him. You know, I don't think that helps him by giving him that number. I think that's already put him under pressure that he doesn't need.
100%.
You see that striker that they're going for, that Højlund or whatever.
Højlund, yeah.
Do you know what? I don't know how true this is because I only heard it on passing. He only scored 9 goals last season.
Yeah.
You know, big old Walt Werhurst. He was up, you know, I mean, they're the sort of numbers he was racking up. I mean, not even lost for United, probably for Burnley.
You won't work any numbers.
You know, you can't be. Man United need a striker desperately, but they need one that's going to be banging goals. Now, I don't know I didn't watch any of his games, so I don't know if he was, you know, if he was creating a lot of goals and he was, you know, coming deep and doing all that sort of stuff. But United just need an out-and-out goal scorer up there.
It's a difficult one. I've seen a bit of him at Atlanta because I like Atlanta. I've always been a fan of watching them. And I think The thing is, it's a bit like, yes, we need an out-and-out striker, but I think you're balancing off. You can go and sign Harry Kane for 100 million, 105 million. You get two seasons out of him, but I don't think it's showing you a long-term project. And I think all of a sudden you're just buying a name for the sake of that short-termism. This kid's going to come in if he does. I don't know how many goals he'll get necessarily, but I think if you look at now of our team, if Mason Mount does contribute with Casemiro and Mason Mount in the hole, then you've got Bruno Fernandes, Rashford, Garnaccio. If Greenwood comes back in, Martial, you've got a lot of quality there that should be a link-up play. And our problem last season wasn't even the conceding goals, but it was the fact that we kept losing possession from the back. So the goalkeeper, De Gea, would knock it long or whatever, and we would then be under pressure a lot. I think it was, you can see the final third was our problem, and that starts from your back line not pushing up far enough, and Maguire's just not good enough at that. And that's another thing.
Do you think Johnny Evans is the answer, is it?
No, Johnny Evans, that was, when I saw that, I was like, wow. I mean, if I'm Maguire, and that's been happening, I'm asking for a transfer. Like, I'm literally going, yeah, if the office going, it's time for me to move on. I know you're at Man United, you're on big money, and you're in England international, but at 30, you haven't got a long left in your career, and you should be now going, right, well, I'm not going to, realistically, at United, if we won two trophies next season, I don't even be in the squad for it. So you can go somewhere like a West Ham or, you know, won a trophy last season, or an Everton or someone like that, and you can have a good back end to your career and get back in the England scene.
I think Maguire would. I think Man United's too much of a big club for him. I mean, at Leicester, he was great, which is why they paid 80 million for him. But I think West Ham, them sort of teams were a good fit for him.
Oh, it'd be fantastic.
I really do. And I think he'll go there and he'll play well.
Yeah, it'd be fantastic. And if we can get him off the books, I just think, I think this season, I always said this transfer was key for Ten Hag, because he had to change the captaincy, change the goalkeeper. He had to change like a few of the players in the age and what we wanted in terms of ability. And I think he's done that. As I said, on the fence with Mount, but we've got to give him a chance. And Neo's going to be a fantastic goalkeeper. I think he'll be a ricket at some times. There'll be a few rickets in him because he's that kind of goalkeeper. But I think he'll create a lot more than what we had before. Bringing a young, dynamic forward. And if Greenwood comes back in, I think we're going to have a very decent season. Anyway,
he will. Do you think Greenwood will get back in though, or do you think they'll ship him out?
Oh, I don't know. I think they need to make a decision and quickly, because it's just it's just dragging on now. Like, at the end of the day, anyone can have their opinion, whatever your situation is, he's still with the lady that the incident happened with. They've just had a child, so he's matured from that. There was rumours that wasn't made public about their sex life prior to this anyway. The dad never came out and condoned him from the beginning, which is weird. I've got daughters that I wouldn't have had that attitude. The case was dropped, and I think we're very much like, oh, he's this, and that. That's just fine. But at the end of the day, there's no charge being brought against him. You can't punish someone for that situation. I think you keep an eye on him, and the club's responsibility if they do keep him now, which I think they will. I think Hag's made it clear he wants to keep him, but they're looking from a PR point of when to make that announcement that he's going to stay before you get the backlash. And I think you keep an eye on, you make sure the club support him and his partner as a community, and make sure it's not happening, and you know the players are around him. So, you know,
just on that though, just before we start the show properly, Benjamin Mendy, did you see this? He got cleared of all charges, and now he's playing for Laurent.
Yeah.
Now my issue with this is, like, I say every case is different, but that, you know, until them court cases are done, his name shouldn't be in the media, because he's lost 3 years of his career now. On something that was not guilty on any of the charges, you know, and he doesn't get that back. Now, I know, you know, every case is different, and that's fine, but I don't think it should be allowed to be in the media and you'd be absolutely like mud slung until you're, because now, what's he doing? The mud's going to stick with him forever, and he's been proven not guilty, but on all charges, you know, and he's lost his whole career to that, and his career will never be the same, his life probably will never be the same.
Yeah.
But anyway, we went a little bit.
That's fine. Well, the minute that happened, Memphis Depay came out on Twitter and wrote a massive post about who's going to stand up for Mendy, who's going to support like this. It's okay. And, you know, he was found guilty, innocent in the court of law, so I can only go from that. But it's right. Like, all these players, they are targeted a lot of the time. I'm not saying it doesn't happen. They haven't made mistakes, and we've seen that is the case. But generally, they found guilty, and they're found guilty. In his case, absolutely right. He's lost 3 years of his career. You know, he's lost, I think, lots of money. I think he'll be all right in the end, because I think that kind of career will, and book sales, and when he does all the other stuff behind it. But you're right, and I think it's the same thing. We're very quick to judge people and be like, no, he's done it or whatever. And even when they're found not guilty, there'll be people going, no, he's still guilty. But because
Like I say, that would be with him forever.
Let's get back in our time machine and get back to what everyone really wants to hear. Let's get back and get back to the 90s. This week's show, guys, we're going to do the football's iconic moments of the 90s. So we're going to pick out a few moments that are close to us or just moments we remember quite vividly.
And Beckham saw Sullivan off his line. Oh, that is absolutely phenomenal.
Exclusively live from the City Ground. Nottingham Forest versus Liverpool in association with Foster's.
Nottingham, one of the prettiest cities in the country. A sporting tradition here stretching all the way back to Robin Hood. The River Trent cuts through the middle of the city. On the one side, Notts County.
When you do that with footballers, like he said about Leeds, and when you do things like that about a man like Stuart Pearce, I've kept really quiet, but I'll tell you something. He went down in my estimation when he said that. We have not resorted to that, but I'll tell you, you can tell him now if you're watching it, we're still fighting for this title, and he's got to go to Middlesbrough and get something. And I'll tell you, honestly, I will love it if we can. Love it. But it's still all in.
I've gone through an entire league campaign without losing. The first time it's happened for over 100 years. Played 38, won 26, drawn 12, lost exactly none. Arsenal's name has a place in the sporting record books for all time.
The destiny of the trophy would remain uncertain until the final kick. The season ending on a high with one of the most closely fought championship races. Sky Sports viewers were able to watch both games live simultaneously as the drama unfolded.
To Sheringham, and Solskjaer has won it!
So, it's 1990s, we've got iconic moments. I think you've got some of the most iconic moments in the 90s, but obviously we're more, you know, famous for those moments. But I'm going to kick us off. The first one that I can remember, when I thought about this topic, and I thought about 90s iconic, I was thinking about the images, like that photo that's stuck in your mind, that you're like, oh, that is just... If you show that moment, I can tell you where I was, what happened. And the first one, I'm going all the way down to the Southeast London at Selhurst Park, the home of Wimbledon and Crystal Palace at the time. Beckham wearing the less iconic number 23 at United. Gets the ball, turns it halfway, just before in his own half. Turns around, bosh, Neil Sullivan on the line. He smacked it 55 yards. It's gone over Neil Sullivan into the goal. Arms are in the air. The curtains are down. Snap that picture. Iconic moment number one is David Beckham scoring from the halfway line. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I've not seen that goal in years, but how you described that there is, I can see it all. I can see it absolutely all. Even when Neil Sullivan goes back and he just puts like this old whimper in one armour, do you know, like,
yeah,
you're nowhere near. I remember as a kid, well, we were all kids then. Amazing. Everyone wanted to try and do that after. It was an amazing goal. It was cheeky, is what it was. And but it burst Beckham onto the scene from then on, wasn't it? That was when Beckham, would you say, like, obviously you're a United fan, you knew of him, but as you know, as other fans and other, that's when you thought, bloody hell, Beckham's got some wand. But it was the vision of it, the audacity of it, and teams were watching out for that after. They were, you know what I mean? Like, he could do that.
The great thing about that goal is that it's, you know, like when a striker does it and they'll turn and they'll just whack it and they'll smash it, volley it, half volley it, 50 odd yards, and then it'll go in. It was the way he took the touch and then he's deliberately, he's just gone, it's in slow motion almost. He's just kind of bomb and you could see he's gone, it's like he looked like a golfer. His foot was like a golf club. The way it's just gone bomb and over, perfectly over him and into the net. He burst on the scene. That was one of the things all of a sudden. And Beckham's got some iconic moments for his career, the goal against Greece and the bandage around the head, the sarong being worn. There's loads of moments Beckham's got in the 90s of and early 2000s of moments. But for me, that was the one I picture the most. That's one of my favourite pictures. I had a poster on my wall And I think I had a picture, a print of it a couple of years ago. Well, a good couple of years ago. Just that, it's just iconic. I love that picture. One of my favorite photos I can remember from the 90s. What have you gone for, mate? What are your top iconic?
Well, so I've sort of gone in order from 1990 to 1999. So I've just done one. Mine's not like a gold. Mine's just, so I've gone for Italia 90 and Gazza crying.
Mm.
You know, that's an iconic moment. We were seven in Italia 90, but I've watched a lot of documentaries on it recently. And I've come back to yourself and I've said, I absolutely loved that tournament. When I've gone and watched it back now, it was amazing. Gazza was amazing in that tournament. Unbelievable. And then he gets booked in the semi-final, which means that if England don't make it to the final, he's suspended. And then you see, and then Gary Lineker's in it as well. And he says the Bobby Robson, doesn't he? Like, keep an eye on him. But Gazza's crying on the pitch. Now that's an iconic moment for me. It's one that you still see today. You still see these pictures around today, and it wasn't like, and if you know, if we would have won in that semi final, it'd have been. I mean, how would he have felt if you know into the World Cup final and he's not playing? You know, he actually showed you how he felt. He showed you how he felt at that moment, and it's an amazing moment, and it's one that you know it would live on. That image will live on forever in like English football history. So yeah, what do you think of that?
Yeah, like, it is a moment. When you said you can just see Lineker walking by. I mean, the video of it is obviously Lineker walking by, looking at him and like pulling the face, and then Gazza's the tears. It's the photo after where he's got the shirt, hasn't he, on the round the nose. And after the game where he's clapping, those two kind of iconic pictures of Gazza. I mean, again, Gazza had so many iconic moments you can talk about in the 90s. It's just absolutely loads and loads and loads for right and wrong reasons. But yeah, that, I would say that's one of his... That's probably if not the most iconic, apart from the dentist chair celebration, that was probably the most iconic.
Yeah.
In that period.
Everyone felt for him though at that time. You know, it pulls on your heart as an English fan, as we are. Even just to see the highlights of that, you know, because we were really young, but even it pulls on your heartstrings. You all feel that for him.
Yeah.
So that's an amazing moment that.
No, I definitely agree. Well, I'll stick with Gazza then, and I'll stick with international for a moment. I'm going for 1996. I'm going with the game that we finally got to host a tournament again since 66. It's England win 2-0 and Gazza scores the goal of the competition, if not the goal of the Euros history competition. It's England versus Scotland. And that iconic moment, and that's not so much of a picture, but it's a bit of art, the way he takes the ball. And going into this game, there was a lot of pressure on Gazza. He was pretty poor the game before. Terry Venables had a bit of annoyed with him because he weren't really stepping up into the tournament. And then obviously this game comes along and it's just magical. I think he was going through a divorce with Cheryl at this time as well. So there was lots of issues behind the scenes with him. But you could see on the pitch, it was just pure joy. I don't think there's ever been a player since that I can say. I mean, Dwight York was quite close in terms of always having a smile on his face, but genuinely just ecstatic to play football. Like you could put him on a pitch around the corner from the house in a park, or you could put him in the middle of Wembley Stadium with 90,000 screaming fans, all Gazza fans, and you get the same performance there as you would there. And that moment in that game when, you know, he mugs off Colin Hendry, gets it in and volleys it in, and just beautiful. And that is an iconic England moment again. You talk about the one you just spoke about, absolutely right. That's a Gazza iconic photo, and this is an iconic, this is iconic Gazza goal. What do you think about that one?
I can't disagree with anything you said. That I feel like all Gazza's issues and everything going when he's on the football pitch, they all go away, and he was a magician. But I had a conflict of interest in that game, obviously, for him being half Scottish. But it was great to be on the English side of the sofa when he'd done that, to go to my dad and go crazy. It was a magical goal. It was, I mean, you very rarely see goals like that in tournaments, you know, special goals. And that was one of them. And then, like I say, all the stick they were getting from being out on the piss on their tour in the friendlies before, and they've gone and pulled out the dentist chair. So it had it all. I didn't actually write down an iconic moment for Euro 96, but if I was going to do it, it would have been the game after. It would have been the Holland game, 4-1. But that, for me, was amazing. But that's not one on my list, so we'll move swiftly on. But it was an amazing goal. He was an amazing player. I mean, and you've got to remember, that was 6 years after Italia 90. So, you know, and he was still doing some magic then, you know.
Absolutely.
Right, so I'm not going to do goals, all goals, because I feel that we can do an episode of goals, and them goals would come up. So I've gone for moments and things that happened in the 90s that I felt like were iconic. So my second one is Denmark winning Euro 92. Now, yeah. I know we probably don't remember too much about it, but that's the whole problem. No one does. You know, it never gets mentioned about Denmark winning it. And it goes against the grain of the teams that always win it. You know, you've got your Frances, your Germanys, your Italy's. And you know, I know in Greece done it in 2004 against the grain, but it's only been Greece and Denmark and it's your usual suspects. But not only that, they wasn't even meant to be in it. They only qualified because of the war in Yugoslavia and they've gone on to win it. So that's like a Cinderella story. Yeah. So I feel like that is like an iconic moment within the decade that we're talking about, you know. It never gets spoken about, you know. And if that happened now, everyone, you know, even if you're not Denmark fans, you're all for that. You know, everyone likes an underdog. And I just feel like that everything went their way there. You know, they were going, they weren't even ready to go. Then they get the call to go to Euro 92 and they go on to win it. That's a film.
Oh, yeah, I mean, you look at the teams they knocked out. Then they beat Netherlands on penalties, and then knocked Germany out in the final to win 2-0 in the final. I mean, and this was like, if I said to you now, right, name that team in for Denmark. How many players can you name from that Denmark team? Realistically,
probably three, and I'll tell you them: the Laudrup brothers and Schmeichel.
Yeah,
and I think anyone could do that. But, you know, them three players, though, class, by the way. But that's for another show.
You've got international again, so I'm gonna come off the international market now. I'm going to go with the Kevin Keegan slump, the fourth. Oh, yeah. Not the rant, because the rant's played over and over again. The rant, everyone knows, right? It's a classic moment as a video, you know, the mind games, classic Ferguson. But for me, one of the most memorable moments of that game is I know the Colin Moore scores late, make it 4-3, is the way Keegan slumps over the hoarding. It's just like, yeah. I'm done. Like, I'm toast. I'm done. I'm finished. Like, there's nothing you could do after that. And you just thought, if you're a player looking over and your manager's doing that, you are just drained of energy because you put everything in and you look at that and that would have replayed. I think that's such an iconic photo, just the way he slumped over the hoardings. You know, because back now, you're in your manager's seats and it's a lot more professional. But then, it was next to the hoardings, and he's over with his big, massive jacket, his perm, and then they've got 4-3 goes in, the camera goes to him, and he just arms in the air and then slumps down like someone shot him. That, to me, is just proper 90s. Like, a proper... Yeah. Someone's literally pulled his soul out and thrown it in the bin. I love that moment. And I love Keegan, but that moment for me is just fucking epic.
Oh, absolutely. Like, not only is that an epic moment, it's an epic game. It's an iconic game. It's one of the great... Yeah. His games in English football history, because everything that had riding on it, and he slumped down like everyone would if he was in that situation. Any Newcastle fan, because they were going for the title at the time, they all would have felt that same moment. So he was just like one of them. I think it was Terry McDermott next to him. He had a perm as well, and he had a great perm when he stand next to him in the black, black jacket with the purple stripes.
Yeah.
Colin Moore did hit the fourth goal in a 4-3 winner, wasn't it? Right at the death. And Colin Moore's running down the side with his arms like that, wasn't he? as he's running down, amazing, amazing moment, amazing game.
I've watched that game probably the most out of a non-United game. I've probably seen that game the most out of any other game, because it's just both the 4-3s. They are just fucking like, it's end-to-end stuff. It's what football was in the 90s. It was just pure, just love and magic. Loved it. Yeah, absolutely loved it.
And then they had a game after that. The next game they had was another 4-3, wasn't it?
Wasn't
as dramatic as that, but the next game they played was 4-3 again. It was like everyone was at it again, like, bloody hell, but it wasn't as dramatic as that one. We can't have an iconic moment in the 90s and not talk about the birth of the Premier League.
Ah, yeah.
1992, it's the year that football changed forever. Yeah. Now, some might argue it was for the better. Some might argue for the worst. I'm on the fence with it both. I love the Premier League, don't get me wrong, but you know yourself, and we're different in our views. I don't like the financial side of it. Pre 1992, football was pure. In the documentaries that I've watched, they said that the minute 1992 come, footballers became pop stars, and there was then superstars then, and then everything changed football wise, and you can see it now for what we discussed at the start here. People are paying 105 million for players, and that was when it all started. So we've got iconic moments, and it is an iconic moment because it changed football forever. The birth of the Premier League.
Brilliant. And what was that? Do you remember the first Sunday night fixture or Sunday afternoon? It was the first Sky Sports Super Sunday with the Premier League in 1992, the first game they aired. Do you know what it was?
Would it have been Sheffield United?
No,
it was Brian Dean.
Brian Dean scored the first Premier League goal, but it was the first game on Sky. Was not in Forest.
Oh, on Sky,
One-nil winning. Forest. Sorry, Liverpool lost 1-0 in the opening Super Sunday.
Oh, was it? Yeah.
Yeah, and that's again. That's an iconic moment. Just for pure fact, it was the first ever game on Sky.
And then their first ever goal, iconic moment. So you know we're flashing them out now.
Exactly. Absolutely. I mean, we spoke about the finance one. For those who listened before, we've obviously gone through the finances of the game. I think it's inevitable now. And all sport, it's not just football. And you can talk about, you know, everyone's era is the best era. We've said this before. We do a 90s podcast because we think 90s are the best. I lean towards the noughties with football as well. I'm a big fan of the noughties to 2010 football. I think that equals or is around the 90s game as well. I think once Chelsea came in, it did change the game slightly. It became Championship Manager. And now, as you've seen, it's completely gone the other way. It's just gone way out of anyone's loop. And you look at clubs like Wrexham and clubs at the non-league and how difficult it is to get there. But I think ultimately, like all sport now, you talk about characters, snooker, darts, boxing, all of it. They've all lost characters in the game. The minute money comes into any of these games and you're working for people that want to make as much money as possible, everything changes. I'll refer it back to wrestling for me because that's my other love. The WWF in the 90s, you had people going out after, you know, in the early 2000s when I went out to events, and after the event, you go to the bar and the wrestlers there and you have a drink with them and you have a bit of banter. You know, that's all gone now. And the wrestling stories you'd hear about, the road stories about what would happen, same as pre-season parties and Tuesday nightclubs and all this stuff, you just couldn't get away with it. I don't think it's just money. It's smartphones was a massive thing because you could do stuff in the 90s and early noughties and get away with it. With the paparazzi would catch you, would be the only thing. But now everything's recorded. You're held accountable 24/7. So I think that the first time Sky came in and took over with Rupert Murdoch, I think it changed the game for the better, and it's just gone so far the other way now. It's a different game you can identify now to then. But I think is it a better game? I don't know. People that listen to the pod will all probably say 90s is the better game or better era, which I probably agree with if a push comes to shove. And United were epic in the 90s, so I can't really say much more than that. Yeah, good choice that one, mate. I'm going to go with another one. It pains me to say this one, but it's the Blackburn winning the league is an iconic moment.
We've got a match. We've got a match. That was one of mine.
It has to be. Yeah. It has to be. It's you know, we talk about money coming into the football. I mean, Blackburn were the first club. Everyone goes about United and you wax on about United spending money, but Blackburn literally an open checkbook and signed players, and then they signed until they won the league. And that was the opening of the financial kind of side coming into it and really just putting your money where your mouth is. And they were such a fun team to watch. And the iconic, obviously losing the game at the end of the season to still win the league against Liverpool, just as iconic. Just them losing that game is iconic, but still winning the league, it's just brilliant. I think there's been loads of tales since that with the Aguero moment, you know, in the later time. And then you had the Liverpool City season, which was very close. But that still stands out for me as one of those, as a United fan, it's horrible, but an iconic moment is Blackburn and Colin Hendry and Alan Shearer lifting that trophy.
I've got that on my list. I was going to get to it after my next one, but totally agree. It was just, I think everyone sees it as an iconic moment because it was just breaking up United's dominance. You know, even if it was just for one season, and you know, they did buy it. I agree with that. You know, Jack Walker was literally went out to buy the best players to achieve it, and he did. But everyone, you know, everyone hated United back then, other than United fans. So when someone's dominant, that's what happens. They always want someone to come along and take the crown. And Blackburn did. It was to their demise because pretty much like Leicester of these times, a few seasons later, you know, they've gone down and, you know, and Blackburn have never recovered. You know, I hope it doesn't happen to Leicester because I like, you know, Leicester were a decent enough side and they've done well. But, you know, as an iconic moment, you can't have iconic moments in the 90s and not mention Blackburn's Premier League win. We got a snap on that one, mate.
With the Blackburn one as well, which I think I listened to a podcast recently. Who was it was on there? Oh, I can't. Oh, God, it's really annoying me now. It was someone. Oh, it's Tim Sherwood on the Simon Jordan podcast.
Yeah, I listened to that.
Yeah, when he was saying about, like, you know, that season after where there was all thinking, right, we can push on. and they got offered Zidane, and Jack Walker turns around and goes, why do I need Zidane when I've got Tim Sherwood?
I know.
We're just thinking, obviously hindsight is a brilliant thing and all the rest of it, but you imagine that season they bring in Zidane, they bring in one or two other players. Fucking hell.
I think it was Zidane and Djorkaeff, wasn't it? Something like that, for like ridiculous, like a couple of million each or something.
1.2 million for Zidane. If you bring them two players in that season, they could have gone on and won it. The whole sliding doors moment with them two signings, you're thinking that's a game changer. Definitely, you could have come in and you could have been that dominant force and pushed on. Obviously, glad they didn't. But what's your next iconic moment, mate?
So my next iconic moment, I've gone back international again. And it was Maradona getting sent home at USA 94. Oh, now, man. The moment of it, obviously, he was on drugs and that, but it's the picture that you see that everyone sees. He's in the blue kit and he scored, didn't he? And he's up to the camera and his eyes are like that. We've mentioned it before, so we won't go, but his saucers are like that. there's not many moments you can remember about USA 94 because obviously England weren't in it. But that's one of them. If you mention USA 94 to someone that's in the 90s, you can guarantee that he's going to mention Maradona getting sent home. You know, it's an iconic moment for that tournament. It's an iconic moment for 1994. And, what's your memories?
Yeah, I remember that one. I don't remember watching. I mean, the other remember that one's Valderrama, is it Colombia with a big hair? I would say that was one of the first things I remember. If you said USA 94, I remember the graphic for the blocks that made the football head. That kind of
they were one of the Coca-Cola footballs that you got from McDonald's, weren't it?
Yeah, that's right.
So McDonald's had little small, like real small balls.
Yeah, that's like one.
And they had the green, white, and patches on it.
That's it. Yeah, that's
green, white, and red.
Yes, I remember those really, really well, and I remember him in for Colombia just being like completely different to what you would have seen anywhere else. And I remember is it Brazil won 94, didn't they? Yeah. I remember Brazil lifting the trophy, and as you said, the Maradona moment was obviously it's iconic. You're absolutely right, because he was definitely on something.
What I mean. It's iconic and a disgrace at the same time, but you know, it's something that you know.
Yeah.
That stayed with him. Don't get me wrong, there was a few moments at the 94 World Cup, which we've probably covered before, like Escobar getting shot, scoring an own goal, you know, stuff like that. But Maradona sticks out for me.
Wasn't that Maradona's last international goal for Argentina as well in 94?
I believe so, yeah.
That's an iconic moment in itself, like the last ever goal that he scored.
You've got to remember, in 1994, in 1986 is when he'd done the hand of God. That's 8 years. I mean, I don't know how old he was at that time, but... You know, you can't imagine he played on for much longer.
Well, it comes on nicely to my next one then, because we're talking about Argentina, and there's only ever one other moment I can imagine of the Argentina team with England, and that would be Michael Owen scores that goal that announced him to the world.
We've got another snap. But I've got something to add to it, so you carry on.
Well, no, I remember that was the 98 was obviously peak football for us, like being in school, you know, having arguments about different players and coming in with our match and our shoot, and then having a debate about who's doing this, who's signing this player. Obviously, over the summer holidays, we all broke away for World Cups. We weren't really together, obviously, for it. But then coming back, it was like, did you see that moment? Did you see that? And I remember when Michael Owen burst into the scene with that goal, when he literally did, it was an iconic goal. And obviously, we lost the game, but it's a shame because that game gets won, that goal is even in more high regard than it even is now, because that's a winning goal in that tournament or whatever it would be. But it was just such a good goal, the way he takes him on and beats him and scores and lightning fast. And all of a sudden, everyone was... It's the same Rooney effect that he had in 2004 with Portugal, when all of a sudden, everyone did not want to go near Rooney. And there's not many players that England have had over the last, let's say, 50 years. You've probably got three players that were genuinely people were scared against. And that was obviously, as we mentioned, Gazza. It was Michael Owen and Wayne Rooney that with genuine fear in defenders and midfielders when their names on the team sheet. And that goal for me just was, I love that goal. It's fucking a brilliant goal. Brilliant moment. Like, it's the iconic video of it and the iconic moment when you can see him scoring the goal and the celebration. Loved it. What have you got to add to that?
Like I was talking about some of England's best goals, that's up there. The significance of it. It was amazing. He runs from his own half. And he just just running at pace, and it's an amazing, amazing goal. like you said, if we win that game, it goes down as the greatest goal ever in an England shirt. But so I got to snap you there. But also in the same game, another iconic moment is when David Beckham, who scored that goal from the halfway line, kicks out at Simeone. You know, you have the good and the bad in the same game. It's another iconic moment because of what happened after, which was a disgrace by England fans, you know, like burning effigies and doing all this other stuff. It's a game of football at the end of the day. We've spoken about this. It's a game of football at the end of the day. No one deserves that. And he managed to turn it around. I mean, he's just signed Messi for his club. You know what I mean? So he ain't doing too bad. But, but you know that was the ups and downs of being an England fan back then as well. You know, like England always, you know, whatever happened, it was always last minute. It was always something, you know, we were always just about in it, but it'd be one moment that killed us. And it was the hope that killed us. And that was another example of it. Owen goes on and does that. And then Beckham kicks out at Simeone because Simeone shoves him in the back. And Simeone goes down like a sack of shit, by the way. And he barely gets touched by the heel of Beckham's boot, but it's the name of the game.
Yeah.
And so I've got that down written down as iconic, both moments in the same game.
Yeah, I agree. Two iconic moments in the same game. Absolutely right. But could you argue there's a third iconic moment with the disallowed goal by Campbell in the same game?
You could do, yeah. And that's, again, another breaking England's hearts because that shouldn't have been disallowed.
Yeah.
You know, that should not have been disallowed. And, you know, no, we don't, none of us are fans of VAR because when we were watching football, that was never a thing. But, you know, I'll be calling for VAR for that. Now, I'm hoping that he turns around and goes, that's good to go.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Do you reckon, though, for me, I think there's two things in that game, just before we go on. If Kalina was refereeing that game, Beckham doesn't get sent off. I think Beckham gets a yellow because Kalina was a smart referee and he would have known what the game was then. It wasn't a horrible kick. It was almost like a little, you know, fuck off, you twat.
It was a flimsy little thing. It was a petulant thing, wasn't it? It was petulant. It was just stupid.
Yeah, absolutely. I think if Kalina referees that game, that doesn't happen and we go on and win it. Or if VAR was about back then, I still don't think he would have necessarily gone off. I think they would have seen the overreaction from Simeone and the referee would have said, you're being stupid now. It's a yellow. And the goal would never have been disallowed. That's my two pence. Absolutely agree. Right, I've got one more moment for me. There's obviously hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of moments that people have. If you've got your own moments, obviously, you know, you feel free to give us a tweet on the Phoenix 5 Show Twitter page. For me, this is the most iconic moment in the 90s.
Can I just jump in and just say,
go on.
Can I guess yours?
Yeah, go for it. You know what it's going to be. It's easy.
Yeah. Well, I've got it down anyway because I didn't want to be too biased in you know, it's Man United's treble season. Treble season, isn't it?
Yeah. No. And there's one moment. Can they score? They always score. And Solskjaer has won it. The commentary on that is just golden. It's been played a million times. You know, a Champions League will never be won like this again. On and on and on. I mean, I know you had the Istanbul miracle, but that was 45 minutes to come back. We had 45 seconds, and I don't think it's ever going to be topped. Again, from a bias point of view, but 45 seconds to win a game. You haven't seen it since, and I don't think you will see that turnaround. And again, Matheus Samaras sitting on the floor. You know, the referee having to help him up, you know, because the players can't get off from the floor for the final kickoff. That moment for me, the pure adulation that Solskjaer has on his face when that goes in is just football at its purest. You know, there is nothing, just iconic. It's just that photo for me. I know the United photo after with David May jumping over everyone who didn't play, but, you know, there's like that kind of John Terry moment. But that, for me, it just is one of the most iconic footballing pictures in history. And I just think it will never be top for me. That is my number one iconic moment of the 90s, as Solskjaer has won it. What do you remember of the game?
I remember the game very well. It wasn't the greatest of games, was it?
Well, you know, awful.
They were awful. And then he just fired a load of strikers on, didn't he?
Yeah.
And then it was Sheringham and Solskjaer were the subs that scored, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So he fired it on. Listen, we know our rivalry is what it is. But I can only imagine what it would have been like to be a fan of Man United at that moment. It must have been the greatest moment in your footballing life because no one was expecting it. It's the 90th minute and you're 1-0 down. And then you go on to win 2-1. Two goals, like you say, in 45 seconds. That's what stuff like magic. That's what football's all about. That is what football's all about. You know, like that feeling. And then on the flip side, you're a Bayern Munich fan, you cannot believe that's happened. That both moments equally live with you forever, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know, the way you feel about that winning it and the way you feel about losing it stays with you, because you just can't believe it. Both sides cannot believe that's happened.
No.
And it's an absolutely amazing thing for you. I also haven't won the Champions League, so I can't say I know what you're feeling, but I can totally understand your love for that and it being your greatest moment.
Oh, 100%.
I've got two more because we snapped on a couple and they're both on my team, so it's worked out quite well. I'll do the first one. It's, we can't have an Iconics decade and not talk about Arsene Wenger.
Yeah,
you know the man come in, he changed football. We're not going to go on too much about it because we've mentioned it a lot of times. But he come in, he changed the way football was played, the diets, the no smoking, the no drinking, etc., etc. And then all the teams followed. He was a revelation. Alex Ferguson said he doesn't know what he's doing. He's come from Japan. Yeah, you know, he's coming, he's talking trash and, you know, all that sort of stuff. And he produced the goods. He agreed with yourself, he fell away in the noughties, you know. But if you look at some of the teams he was getting to qualify for Champions League, I don't think he'd done too bad.
Mm.
You know, we weren't in for titles, but we had no money and he didn't want to say that. But if you go back and look at some of the squads that he got in the top four, no other manager could have done it.
Yeah.
Or maybe a handful could.
Hines has a great thing. Everyone was poo-pooing him, get him out. And then, a bit like, I'm not going to see people poo-pooing Ferguson, but it, you know, 8 or 9 years later, it's taking you to get to challenge it again. What is it? No, it's longer than that. 10 years is it now? So it's not too dissimilar from us. There's a big, massive gap. Everyone went Wenger out. When he went out, it was like everyone came in. It's like, no, he's not good enough. And I think, there's no doubt Wenger was, him coming in was an iconic moment, not just for Arsenal, but for football in England, because he opened the door. I know you had other managers before, like Ozzy Ardiles and people like that, but he really opened the door to a different way of clubs looking at foreign managers, I think, definitely.
We've spoken about it many times before, so we don't need to go into detail. We don't want to bore people. But an amazing moment for me as an Arsenal fan.
Oh, easy. I know. Invincible.
Go on, see if you can guess it.
Invincible season?
No. This is 90s, isn't it? Invincibles was 2004.
2004, yeah, of course it was.
Strictly 90s today. I mean, as it's going to be me and you for a lot of the time now, maybe Lee Harper, we can go where we want with it now because the people that wanted to be all 90s are not here. So we've got free run at this now. But anyway, that's for another day. We're make some announcements. But it's Arsenal winning the league in 1998 and Adam scoring the fourth goal against Everton to seal the league. But it's not only that, it's the commentary. You know, you had a bit of commentary there. And when Adams does it and scores it on the half volley top corner, he goes, and that sums it all up.
Yeah.
And that's the statue they've got outside the Emirates now of Adam standing there. And that's goosebumps for me. You know, I remember that like it was yesterday. But yeah, so Adams. But and you know who sets up Adams for that? Steve Bold. Steve Bold kicks that ball over the defence for Adams to run onto it, which is like madness for two centre-backs. Adams chests it down and hits it on the half volley, top corner, and it just stands there. It just turns in a circle. And that sums it all up.
You'd amazing never moment. About doing that again, will you? I mean, even now, I
never.
The back goal was as well orchestrated and scored like that. I remember
Steve Bold with the assist? Come on.
I remember that game. I was in the Springbok pub at the time. Because basically, if you won that game, United were out. It was as you said, they won it. And I was in the Springbok pub and I was thinking, Everton are a decent team. We've got a chance here. And I think they missed a chance early on, the first 6-7 minutes.
Yeah, they did.
And then all of a sudden, it was like 1-0. I was like, all right. And then it was 2. And I was like, they're fucking destroying them. And then at the fourth minute, I remember just like I slumped in my seat. Because not only have you won the league, but you won it in fashion and your captain scored an absolute belter of a goal. It was like it's iconic. It's definitely, as you said, absolutely great. Great.
Oh, Arsenal won the last 10 games of the season to win it.
Yeah, it went on what a run that was. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
it was. That's an iconic moment. I think we've covered quite a few. You could delve in there and pull out moments all over the place, but these are the ones that stick out in the memory.
I agree. There are many you're going to miss. You know, you got the Cantona moments. You had the Janino moments. You could have looked at the Max Fiction in Italy. There's so many moments you can think iconic moments of the 90s. But
we've done like controversial moments. So I could have put the kung fu kick from Cantona, the Canio pushing the referee. If you want to go, but we've gone down that route with the controversy. So I more went iconic moments. You know, agreed. Things that are stepping
more in positive.
What do you think of the 90s?
Yeah, more iconic positive moments. Agreed.
Yeah,
absolutely. Right. Well, little quiz then, Dave. We're going to just do two guess if you can get who they are. See how many you can get out of these. So the first one, I'll give you a clue, and then you can have a guess after each clue. Try and get it as least amount of guesses as you can. I've tried to make it fairly, not easy, but not too challenging. I had a few ones, but obviously Lee's not made it, so I've scrapped the QPR players and whatnot. Right, first one. First clue is this. Have a guess. Obviously, you're not going to get it from this unless you're a genius. I was born in England in 1975. Who am I?
Is this Arsenal players or?
No, this is a Premier League player. I'll give you a clue. The Premier League player or was a Premier League player.
Jesus Christ. I'm just going to throw out Vinny Jones.
Okay, incorrect. I only played for one club in my career.
Is this is it 90s only?
This is 90s. I've got 90s, yeah.
Jamie Carragher.
No. I have 85 caps for England.
Play for one club. 85 caps for England. Gary Neville.
Whoa! Yeah, boy!
Is it?
Yeah. The last clue. There's two more clues. I have won two Premier Leagues as a captain of the club. Was top number one. And the last final clue is going to be my brother was the captain of Everton, and you would have got.
Do you know what though? See, that's fourth clue. I wouldn't have got that. I wouldn't have said it was Gary Neville then, because I would have presumed it was Keane the whole way through. So I wouldn't have said Gary Neville if I'd have got to the fourth clue. I might have got it from the fifth one though. But that fourth clue would have thrown me.
Well done. You've stuck. Okay, next one. Right, here we go. Last one. I was born in Europe in 1973. Who am I?
Born in Europe.
Yep.
Well, you can't even give me a country, no? The whole of the continent.
The whole continent of Europe. Who am I?
All right. Del Piero.
Incorrect.
The whole continent.
Okay, I'll give you... All right. I won eight trophies.
I won
eight trophies in my homeland, including the Champions League.
That's either a United player or some Italian. I'm going to go with Roy Keane.
Incorrect. I have also won a Premier League.
Jesus Christ. So he's... He won it in his hometown, yeah? The second clue is he's won eight trophies in his hometown.
He's won eight trophies in his homeland, including the Champions League. And he's also won a Premier League title.
Ruud van Nistelrooy.
Incorrect. I have also spent 3 years in Barcelona and won nothing.
Zlatan Ibrahimovic.
Incorrect. Okay, you ready? I've got two more clues to go with. Next clue. I played 100 games for Arsenal.
Is it Dennis Bergkamp?
Incorrect. Last clue. Where is it? Hold on. I finished my career at the same club I started my career, Go Ahead Eagles, that I started in 1990 and played my last year in 2009.
This is bloody... I've had a mayor saying, well, you played 100 games for Arsenal. I said Dennis Bergkamp. What else? Well, this is bloody hard. It's 100 games. Eight. I'm a Premier League. Is it Nicholas Anelka?
No. Okay. The answer was, you're going to kick yourself in this one because you said all the Netherlands players. It was
Mark Overmars. Jesus Christ. Oh, yeah. Shit. Yeah. Ajax. Yeah. That's a good one.
Yeah. When I was doing the clues, I was thinking, because I didn't want to say from Holland, because I thought if you go Holland, it narrows it down. That's why I went with Europe, because I thought it makes it a bit more challenging.
Yeah. I might have got it if you'd done that. Yeah, for sure.
All right, guys. Listen, thanks again. Obviously, the gap's been quite long, but hopefully we'll be producing some more over the summer. We'll keep in touch. You've got our Twitter page. Keep in contact with us. And for Dave's cousins out there in the north of the UK, or well, north of England, in Scotland, should we say.
Why don't you just say my cousins in Europe?
Your cousins in Europe, hope you're listening and enjoying, and we'll see you all again very soon. Dave, bit of blast as always. I'll speak to you soon.
Take care. Thanks, guys.
straightforward. He has no experience of English football. He's come from Japan.
He's got to go to Middlesbrough and get something. And I'll tell you, honestly, I will love it if we beat them. Love it.
So I'm not one of the bottle. I think I'm a special one.
I have to talk about facts, because I think it's important.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.